time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Atamaria, Rachel, I am fine, thank you very much, on a bright and sunny Tuesday morning.
Yeah, it's gorgeous outside. It's really, really lovely. And we've got some big stuff to talk about. As per, we're still sitting in 2.5 and the government has confirmed that we're going to be sitting in 2.5 for a little bit longer as well. And how is this kind of affecting Aucklanders in terms of travel? That's been a big one in the last couple of weeks, people moving in and out of the city and around the city. What's been your observations on this?
Yeah, look, I think everybody welcomed 2.5, and I think most people understood that why it was 2.5 and not level 2.
Mm-hmm.
We still have that community transmission, two community transmitted cases yesterday, and it's fluctuated between 2 and 5 a day generally over the last week. There's a reasonable confidence that they've contained the spread of the virus, and that's why we could come down to 2.5. But the virus is still there, so we need to have all of the usual measures in place to make sure that its potential spread is curtailed. The great thing is we don't have roadblocks on the Bombay Hills and up at Tahana in the north. We can move in and out of the region, but the government has called and the health authorities have called for Aucklanders that are travelling out of Auckland to treat it as if it is in Auckland and not to go to gatherings of more than 10 people. Now, that's a hard one to enforce, but you can see the common sense in it. Where this virus has really taken off is where there have been significant gatherings of people, and that's generally, in this mm-hmm. case, been in churches, but it can be schools, but it could easily have been, weddings or funerals or whatever.
Mm.
So we can go out of Auckland. We just don't need to stay local anymore, which is really great. And if they ever do go to a level 3 again, health authorities and the police are going to have to lift their game on how they operate those roadblocks. In one case, notably, they had it in the wrong place. So they were stopping people from one part of Auckland going to another part of Auckland, which I had to intervene on with the area commander of police. And, the long queues and the difficulties created for people on the, particularly around Bombay, were pretty bad. I think we all feel that we're kind of out of home detention now, and we can, go down south, travel around the North Island, go down to the South Island. But with that freedom comes the responsibility, and it's, look, if you are sick, if you've got any symptoms, don't even think about travelling. Just get tested. Stay in self-isolation till you are and you've got the results. And, it's good to see most people on public transport wearing masks. Most good to see, 75%, they say, of people at supermarkets. But some areas much lower than others. And, people just got to think, let's do the common sense thing so that we can curtail the spread. We really don't want to go back up. We want to go down.
Keep going down.
Level.
Yeah, that is a very good direction to try and move towards, and that is a bit of a team effort. You've also been quite optimistic about the potential for Auckland University to bring some international students back in through a quarantine and managed isolation situation that they would be running themselves. Can you tell us a little bit about this? Because I know people will have some reservations about particularly the privatisation of quarantining and the potential for that to go wrong.
Yeah, look, we really don't know how long the virus is going to be rampant internationally. Worrying signs out of India at the moment and other places. So the health and safety aspects have to be paramount. And, it's worrying to see one flight coming into the country had 17 cases of COVID-19, while we're a long way from where we want to be internationally. But there are certain groups of people that have a big impact on our economy, and provided, and this is the big if, provided you can do it safely. For example, it'd be really good to get some of our expert skilled workers into the country, because at the moment, if we can't get them in on a project like City Rail Link,
mm-hmm.
that could cost us hundreds of millions of dollars. Students aren't quite at that level of priority. But long-term students, students that are going to be here 3 or 4 years doing a degree course, Each of those bring, you know, spending of about $80,000 a year into the city, and the collective value of international students for the city is about $2.8 billion, I think, from memory.
Right.
So could they all come in and stay in hotels like returning New Zealanders? And the answer is no, that's not viable. Could they stay in properly managed hostels with 24/7 supervision, testing before they left to come to New Zealand, testing when they got here, testing at 3 and 12 days, supervision, close supervision by state authorities, but managed privately, and the costs met by the students coming back. So it's not a burden on the taxpayer.
So this is
that's what we've got in mind. But you know, that's not going to happen this year.
No.
Potentially, it could happen next year.
So this is
hope that it might be possible.
In practice, not necessarily a bad thing. I think people want to see eventually students and skilled workers and things being able to come back into the country and contribute, you know, to society and the economy and all of that. But I think people do have very real reservations. Having a look at Melbourne, for example, and where privately managed isolation facilities were sort of the cause of some of the leaks in that sort of setup over there. What would you need to see, Phil, to make you feel confident that that would be a watertight process? Would you need to see some sort of relationship going on between the university and the government, for example, or would it be something that you would manage through council? How would you imagine that working?
No, it needs to be done through government, and it needs to be at least the same standard, if not higher, than what government is doing with returning New Zealanders. Now, you know, the proposal from Auckland University was to have, as a trial, three groups of 300 students. They can hold up to 300 students in a hostel that they've set aside for that purpose. 24/7 supervision, nurses on site, regular testing, absolutely contact tracing, although they actually won't be moving out of the hostel. And there would need to be a proper level of government comfort,
right,
that the security was fine. I mean, it could go as far as having, you know, electronic bracelets just to ensure that people stay there. But in some ways, you'll have less problems with, say, a group of international students coming back as part of a learning process that they value and they don't want to jeopardise, than you would with returning New Zealanders, some of whom have obviously got, you know, suffer from mental health problems and have broken out of quarantine in ways that are pretty inexplicable in some cases. You know, the first principle is safety and health. And the second principle that we can't ignore is the longer COVID goes on and the higher the cost to the economy, the higher the cost to, you know, what we can do as a community in terms of money available to spend on the services that we as New Zealanders want. And for an institution like Auckland University, you know, they'll be losing probably tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars in fees as well. And for the central city area here, you know, one of the things that made the central city area such a vibrant place was that you had a whole lot of those international students that were out there and, you know, having dinner in the cafes and the restaurants, etc. So it's not putting economics ahead of health. It's saying health comes first, but if we can guarantee the health and safety of what we are doing, then of course we want to have that extra income coming into the city so that we can recover economically, we can create jobs, and we can get back on our feet.
I did just want to touch briefly on something that RNZ's been reporting on in the last couple of days, which is a possible rise in antisocial behaviour on Karangahape Road. And there's been a bit of discussion with Lifewise, who's an organisation that works with rough sleepers around the K Road area, particularly, about what that actually means. Now, a lot of these people are still being housed in motels at the moment, which I think is possibly a good thing. And I'm curious to know what your thoughts are about the we've talked about this before, but the longer term ability to get people into permanent housing. If we can do it in a pandemic, can we do it longer term? And what are your thoughts around this?
Well, what I think the pandemic showed is that in a crisis situation, all the stops were pulled out, And I think LifeWise, which is a great organisation, does fantastic work, and it's part of the Housing First Collective that I work with quite closely as Mayor. The Chief Executive, I think, said for the first time ever, everybody sleeping on the street had the opportunity to have accommodation, mainly in motels, and most of them took up that opportunity, a hardcore didn't. The great irony is, when I went up K Road and I talked to the Business Association the other day with Councillor Pippa Coon and talked to the guy that does all the security up there, he said, look, I used to know everybody that was sleeping rough by name and we had a great relationship. They didn't cause any problems. And when I asked them to do something, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, you're sleeping in a doorway, people are going to be coming back into town now and you just need to get up and find a place to spend the rest of the day, they'd do it. He said, now there's a whole lot of people, that have come in to fill the vacuum of the people that were once sleeping rough there. And he says, I don't know them and they don't do what I ask and they're harder to deal with. There's some element of drugs, I think, involved in it, and there's been some behaviour that I've reported to the police and taken up with the police.
So what's happening is the council working with these organisations to sort of, I guess, look at more permanent ways of supporting these communities?
Yeah, look, what ideally we want to do is that we want to be able to provide managed accommodation for everybody that's sleeping rough. Now, as the COVID-19 crisis showed, there will still be a hardcore of people who simply say, no, I don't want your accommodation. I'm happy with what I'm doing and I'm not going to change my ways. And the reason for that is often mental health. Sometimes it's addiction problems. There's a multitude of problems. Now, what the government has done helpfully is that they've extended, we've been able to get people off the streets because they have put, I think it was 174 million, or I'm just trying to remember, that might not be the exact figure, but they've put well over $100 million into ensuring that we can provide accommodation. Some of those people sleeping in motels then come back during the day and still hang out on the streets where they normally do, but at least they're not on the streets at night and they're not subject to the health and safety factors of rough sleeping. So what do we really want? We want long-term options for those people, and it's not just a case of providing the accommodation, it's providing the wraparound services such as treating mm-hmm. addiction, dealing with mental health disorders, which is what Housing First does in its program to get people off the street. And we've housed hundreds of people through Housing First, and it's been really effective because, first of all, you get them off the street. You can't solve their problems while they're on the street, and then you put wraparound services that deal with the problems that led them to being homeless. You can't do one without the other. Hmm. The two have to be a partnership, and we'll, of course, be working with government to encourage much more long-term solutions, and in the end, a big part of that will be providing more social housing. There are some people who will never be able to afford or won't fit into private rental housing. They'll never own their own house. Social housing mm-hmm. is the best answer for that. We've proven that for well over for about a century in New Zealand. So that's where we've got to go.
Well, very briefly, before we let you go, you did just want to touch base on Matariki. What are your thoughts around the potential for a new holiday there?
Yeah, well, I've just been listening to what people have been saying, and I think there's three good arguments. One, Matariki is a homegrown public holiday. It marks something that's important culturally to Māori, and it highlights the significance of the season. Two, for the tourist industry, they're welcoming it with open arms. They say the more long weekends that we can provide, the more people travel within New Zealand and they spend their money, and it keeps the tourist industry going because they're going through hard times. And the third thing is, I think among the OECD countries, we've got one of the lowest level of public holidays of any of the wealthy countries in the world. And in the middle of winter, you know how dreary it gets in winter, and it's that long period between Easter and Labour weekend. This is something that might brighten it up, give people a bit of a break at a time that counts. Businesses are saying, well, it'll cost money. Yeah, it will cost a bit of money. But the way to address that is through improving productivity.
Holiday's quite a good way to do that, maybe.
The holiday, people will be refreshed. It's something to look forward to. It's good for the tourist industry. It's good for creating jobs. I think it's a great idea, and I think New Zealanders will embrace it.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Phil, as per every week. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Look forward to it.
Thanks,
Rachel.
See you
Bye.
Then.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you.